From experimental history, nothing ever dies. It merely becomes embarrassing. Here's a reasonable thought. As the replication crisis has unfolded over the past 10-15 years, a bunch of psychological phenomena have been debunked and discarded forever. Power posing, ego depletion, growth mindset, stereotype threat, walking slower after reading the word Florida, all gone for good. Surely nobody studies or publishes on these topics anymore, except maybe to debunk them a little further, like infantrymen wandering around a battlefield after the fighting is done and issuing the coup de grace to those poor wounded soldiers who are dying, but not yet dead. This isn't true. All of these ideas live on, mostly undaunted by news of their deaths. Nobody calls it power posing anymore. But you can still find plenty of new studies on embodiment and expansive posture, like this one, and this one. Ego depletion studies keep coming out. One psychologist who used to work on stereotype threat now disavows the theory entirely. I no longer believe it is real, but you can make up your own mind. But another psychologist claims that stereotype threat is real and virtually universal. There is a lot of evidence supporting its existence. Tense and impact. I count over 1,000 papers published on growth mindset just in the first 3 months of 2026. People are even doing variations on the slow walking study, but now in virtual reality. This leads to some absurd situations. We're not arguing about whether stereotype threat is powerful or weak, or whether it is pervasive or rare, but whether it is obviously alive or obviously dead. That's literally the premise of a Monty Python sketch. It might seem like the way to resolve these disputes is to weigh up all the evidence, meta-analyze all the data, deploy your P-curves, your moderator analyzes, and your tests for heterogeneity, maybe even run a big multi-lab, pre-registered replication. Do all that, and then we'll finally know whether these effects are real or not. This is a trap. We have spent the past decade doing exactly those things, and yet here we are. Clearly, no amount of data collecting, number crunching, or bias correcting is going to lay these theories to rest, nor will it return them to the land of the living. We need a different approach, and so we must turn, as we so often do, to the source of all truly important ideas in the philosophy of science, the sci-fi universe of Halo. In Halo, Spartan super soldiers never officially die. They are only ever listed as missing in action. This is meant to keep morale high among a hypermilitarized human culture that is on the verge of being exterminated by evil aliens. I think we should adopt a similar scheme for scientific phenomena. They never die. They merely become embarrassing. This isn't how science is supposed to work, of course. The secret sauce of science is supposed to be falsifiability. It ain't science unless you can kill it. If I claim that all swans are white and you show up with a black swan, then I'm supposed to bid a tearful goodbye to my theory and send it to that big farm upstate where it can frolic and play with all the other failed hypotheses. Falsification sounds straightforward until you actually try it. You show up with your black swan, and instead of admitting defeat, I go home, well, is it really black? Is it actually a swan? Seems more like a dusky looking duck to me. And we publish dueling papers until the end of our days. Falsifiability depends not only on the qualities of the theory itself, but also on the whims and biases of the people who engage with it. And because there are so many people with so many different whims and biases, few theories are ever going to be left with zero adherence. For instance, there are still physics PhDs trying to prove that the sun orbits the earth. That might be disturbing, but it's also necessary. If no one was ever willing to entertain crazy ideas, we wouldn't have any scientific progress at all. We have to keep some kooks around because occasionally, as the economic historian Joel Mocker puts it, a crackpot hits the jackpot. When the persistence and necessity of kookiness means we'll never be able to say that a theory is well and truly dead. We can, however, say when a theory is embarrassing. If I deny the possibility of a black swan, and you produce something that looks awfully like a black swan, it's still possible that I will prevail. Maybe we'll discover your black swan is actually a white swan covered in soot, or DNA analysis will vindicate my dusky duck theory. But if I didn't expect a black swan looking thing to exist at all, my hypothesis is a lot less plausible than it was before, and it's much more embarrassing to believe in it. This is the situation we appear to be in with many theories in psychology. We can't say whether they're real or not. Somewhere out there, the Spartans may live on, but if we've been studying something for decades and people look at all the evidence and they still doubt whether it exists at all, we have to admit, that's cringe. Cringe doesn't mean wrong. Continental drift was cringe. Two germ theory was cringe. Three smallpox vaccination was cringe. Four all of them went from mortifying to undeniable. Maybe truly revolutionary theories must follow that trajectory. If a scientific idea is young and it's not cringe, it probably has no promise. But if it's old and it's still cringe, it probably has no merit. That's why I am not optimistic about any big name theory in psychology that has gone the wrong direction on the cool cringe continuum over the past 10 years. It's not impossible for them to make a comeback, but it's not the way things usually go. We don't have nearly enough evidence to support such a conclusion, and we never will. Five, in fact, insisting that certain effects are not real merely provides an incentive for people to keep studying them because it makes the results newsworthy. Look, we're proving the existence of a supposedly non-existent effect, but of course it's rare for anyone to actually prove such a thing. Still, no matter how ropey things get for these theories, it makes no sense to write them off as not real. If stereotype threat truly doesn't exist, that means you could never, under any circumstances, run a study that produces results in line with the theory. That's a crazy claim to make. Instead, they are almost always proving that, given infinitely flexible theories and infinite ways to test them, you can produce some small effect that kind of sort of accords with some version of the hypothesis, broadly construed. No one should claim that this is impossible, and no one should get credit for showing that it is possible. If we appreciated how hard it is to kill a theory for good, maybe we'd stop wasting our time trying to do exactly that. For instance, ego depletion. The idea that willpower is a muscle that can get fatigued by overuse has been the subject of at least three big replication attempts. This pre-registered multi-lab replication from 2016 found no effect n equals 2001 141. This pre-registered multi-lab replication from 2022 also found no effect n equals 3005 131. But oops, this other pre-registered multi-lab replication from 2022 did find an effect N equals 1,775. At this point, maybe we should cut it out with all the pre-registered multi-lab replications and just admit this theory is never going to die, and to spend any more effort investigating it would be embarrassing for all involved. Science snobs love to claim that this problem is unique to the social sciences, as if falsification is a breeze everywhere else, but it isn't. For example, when Arthur Eddington went out to test the theory of relativity by photographing an eclipse in 1919, he ended up throwing out several pictures that didn't work. He reasoned that the sun had heated the glass of his telescope unevenly, throwing off the results. Was that fair? Was it right? Were those pictures legitimate and failed tests of the theory, or were they tainted by faulty?